This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Kenya's presidential spokesman said Monday that the government will not replace the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, a decision that will no doubt anger the opposition, which said Friday that the panel committed criminal acts and that most belong in jail.
That's Jill Craig reporting from Nairobi as Kenya sets a date for new presidential elections. Details next. Also, Kenya's education minister says the school fire that killed 9 teenage girls and injured 10... was deliberately set. And there is a call by UN independent experts to investigate possible crimes against humanity in Burundi. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Kenya has set October 17th as the date for a new presidential election. Today's announcement follows an unprecedented ruling on Friday when Kenya's Supreme Court nullified the results of the recent presidential election and called for a new vote. From Nairobi, Jill Craig has more about what happens next.
The Supreme Court's decision to annul the victory of President Uhuru Kenyatta puts the country in uncharted territory. Adams Olo is a senior lecturer at the University of Nairobi.
It's the first time that one arm of the government, and specifically the judiciary, has been brave enough, if I can use those words, to stick to the constitutional provisions and the rule of law, and therefore overturn the declaration of a sitting president who was declared president-elect.
And the clock is now ticking, after the court ruled that fresh polls must be held within 60 days. Kenya's presidential spokesman said Monday that the government will not replace the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, a decision that will no doubt anger the opposition, which said Friday that the panel committed criminal acts and that most belong in jail. Nanjala Nyabola is a Nairobi-based writer and political analyst. She argues that low public confidence in the IEBC will be a big concern going into the next election and believes the commissioner should resign.
In good conscience, if they look at the indictment that they've received from the justices, they should consider stepping aside and letting the alternates take their position. That would be the ideal situation.
Kenyan political writer and commentator Barack Maluka says the short time frame could work, given that this election will be different from the one August 8th.
They could, also take solace in the knowledge that previously they were dealing with six elections and that this time round they are dealing with one election. They could also take comfort in the fact that it shouldn't be difficult for them to know where they dropped the ball, who dropped the ball, and to deal with that particular individual or with those individuals.
Kenyatta and opposition candidate Raila Odinga didn't waste time in getting back in campaign mode over the weekend, speaking to large crowds of supporters in Nairobi, Thika, and Nakuru. Kenyatta said he will respect the court ruling, but referred to Supreme Court justices as wakora, a Swahili word for crooks. Odinga has continued to condemn the Electoral Commission. In the meantime, Kenyans are still waiting for the release of the Supreme Court's full judgment, which is required within 21 days of the ruling. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
The head of SAID Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission has said changes would be made to the way the board is run. Chairman Wafulu Chekubuti said the commission would replace some personnel in the wake of Friday's Supreme Court ruling, which called for new polls within 60 days. However, Chekubuti says he will not resign. Kwampezi Makoka is a columnist for Nairobi's Daily Nation newspaper and a program advisor for the group Journalists for Justice. Reporter William Eagle asked him about the changes that might be made by the commission and what might be done to ensure the new polls are not contested.
Unfortunately, we are in a transitional moment, and in this transitional moment, there is not much that the president or the government can do in terms of changing the electoral management body at the policy level. Probably changes can be made at the secretariat level, at the administrative operational level, but at the policy and leadership level, the only thing that Kenyans can hope for is that there will be vigilance and that there will be adherence to the constitution and the law.
Are there any particular changes on the levels that you mentioned that you think would be proper and suitable this time around?
Yes, certainly. One of the issues that has emerged is the use of technology, and we have adopted technology in the transmission of results, but that system seems to have been opaque in the pre-past election. Technology failed almost entirely in 2013. It seems not to have been used properly in the 2017 election, and I think there needs to be a little more oversight, shadowing, if you like, by representatives of political actors. If political actors nominate experts who can shadow the Electoral Commission's ICT experts, then that would give an assurance of integrity to the electoral process.
To what extent can the press help with transparency for this new round of elections?
There are fears that the media in Kenya seems to have been either compromised or silenced. So we can only hope that the media will step up to the plate and perform their oversight role robustly. But in the absence of the media performing that role, then other individuals and organizations will have to step forth and provide that oversight.
Why do you say that some fear the press had been compromised? Compromised by whom or by what?
One is that the government, which is one of the largest advertisers, has taken away a huge chunk of finances that would go to newspapers, television stations as advertising, and now controls this very tightly. And then that obviously confronts managers, editors with a choice whether we want to stay alive for the following day or if we want to be critical. That's financial pressure that is exerted on media organizations. There is also intimidation. Intimidation is a form of arrest, and also just talking down to the media in terms of what we can report and what we cannot report. The level of analysis has been less than stellar. The level of reportage has also not been critical, both for the opposition and for the government. And that presents its own set of problems, because then there seems to be no habitat in the public sphere in Kenya. That compounded with the fact that Kenya is easily one of those countries that has embraced information technology wholesale, and so there is a whole new field where social media is playing an increasingly significant role in terms of the dissemination of information, but also in the dissemination of distortions, propaganda, and fake news.
Also, does this latest ruling strengthen the role of the judiciary, making it more or less now a co-equal branch of the government with the executive and the legislature?
I think in terms of stature, the judiciary in Kenya, since the adoption, the promulgation of the constitution in 2010, the judiciary has always fought to maintain its space as a co-equal arm of state. So that struggle, I think, continues, and this judgment, the judgment delivered today, probably is the highlight of that struggle.
That's Kwamchezi Makoka, a columnist for Nairobi's Daily Nation's newspaper. He spoke with VOA's William Eagle. Meanwhile, in Kenya, Saturday's school fire that killed 9 teenage girls and injured 10 others was deliberately set. That's according to the country's education minister. Fred Matian says arson is to blame for the blaze at the Moi Girls' School in Nairobi. He says there have been similar attacks around the country, including schools in Mombasa and Kisumu. However, he did not say how many fires there have been. He did say some of the fires are related to politics regarding who run the schools. Matiani says police have leads in the direction of specific suspects.
Music.
UN independent experts are calling for an international investigation into possible crimes against humanity committed since April 2015 by supporters of the government in Burundi. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva on the findings of a report by the UN Commission of Inquiry on Burundi.
The report documents serious violations of human rights in Burundi, including murder, rape, arbitrary arrests and detention, and forced disappearances, torture, and persecution. Commission of Inquiry President Fatsa Ugergus tells VOA these violations stretch back to April 2015, when the crisis erupted and are continuing today. He says violations such as torture, rape, and extrajudicial killings are widespread and systematic.
We have reasonable ground to believe that some crimes against humanity have been perpetrated in Burundi. And on the basis of this, we have asked the International Criminal Court to open an investigation on those crimes, on the situation prevailing in Burundi.
The crisis erupted when President Pierre Nkurunziza announced plans to run for a third term. This triggered protests by opponents who argued it was unconstitutional. Ugergus says members of the National Intelligence Services, police and military, as well as members of the party's youth league, known as Imbonerakure, are the main perpetrators of crimes. He says the conflict is mainly political, not ethnic, though he acknowledges ethnic elements are present.
Those elements of ethnicity are reflected in some speeches and in some insults during, let's say, torture or during arrestation, during a detention. But we have some fears that it might escalate because of this hate speech. It might escalate in an ethnic conflict.
The government would not allow the commission to enter Burundi to conduct its investigation. So findings are based on interviews with more than 500 witnesses, including Burundian refugees and others still in Burundi, often at risk to their lives. Ugergus says the government refuses to cooperate with the commission and has not responded to its report. The report will be submitted to the UN Human Rights Council in mid-September. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Meanwhile, Burundi's government has rejected the allegations made by the UN Commission of Inquiry, saying the report is biased and filled with false information. Moses Havyarimana has the story from Bujumbura.
In dismissing the allegations, Minister for Human Rights, Martin Vyabandi, says the UN Commission of Inquiry never even considered the report issued by the Burundi government on the political violence.
The government of Burundi rejects the report. The position of Burundi is that there is no necessity to conduct another investigation on Burundi, as our judicial institutions are able to do so. The government and the people of Burundi are committed to promote and protect human rights. It is our responsibility as the government elected by people, and we will continue to do so. We have to promote accountability.
Hundreds of people have been killed since 2015 after the incumbent President Pierre Nkurunziza vied for another term in the office. Opposition member criticized the move as unconstitutional. Burundi's parliament has formed its own commission of inquiry to investigate the UN report's findings, since the investigators were barred from entering the country. The UN commission today called on the International Criminal Court to investigate possible crimes against humanity. Burundi opposition leader and deputy speaker of the parliament, Agathon Rwasa, says the call for the NICC investigation was long overdue.
The right time would have been since they were committed these crimes. You know, the International Criminal Court, Burundi exists already. Let's talk about Burundi becoming independent in 1962. And what has been happening in Burundi would have been interesting. The international community, I think they have been late to investigate about what happened in Burundi.
Sporadic violence continues in Burundi. Grenade attacks on local bars have killed 15 people over the past 3 months, and dead bodies are frequently found on the roads. However, authorities say the attack were not politically motivated. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
You are listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Kenya has set October 17th as the date for a new presidential elections. Also in Kenya, Kenya's education minister says the school fire that killed 9 teenage girls and injured 10 was deliberately set. And there is a call by a UN independent expert to investigate possible crimes against humanity in Burundi. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The top political opposition leader in the Democratic Republic of Congo returned to the country yesterday. Félix Tshisekedi had taken a trip to Europe. Shortly before his arrival in Kinshasa, police had arrested some of his supporters during a demonstration. Tshisekedi is the son of longtime opposition leader Etienne Tshisekedi, who died in February at age 84. AFP reports police had banned yesterday's demonstration, saying they feared violence. They used tear gas to break off the protest over continued delays in scheduling a presidential election. The European Union's top court is expected to rule Wednesday on whether to uphold a quota system requiring member countries to take in migrants and refugees. The plan calls for accepting asylum seekers from Italy and Greece, the two European countries that have received the most migrants and refugees. AFP reports the European Court of Justice will decide on a challenge to the quota system by Hungary and Slovakia. In July, the court's senior lawyer recommended the challenge be dismissed. The United Nations estimates that there are nearly 23 million refugees in the world today. Many are children who live in dangerous conditions such as war or drought. Recently, several new books have been published to help dramatize and explain the plight of refugee children to young readers. VOA's Adam Phillips reports.
Suzanne Del Rizzo is the Canadian author and illustrator of My Beautiful Birds. It's a book for young readers based on a true story about Sami, a Syrian boy who raised birds on his rooftop before his family was forced to flee the war. Here Del Rizzo reads an excerpt from the book where the grieving boy tears up a picture he's made of his birds at a refugee camp in Jordan.
I tear my painting piece by piece. Black paint stains my hands and my clothes. My stained heart is torn to pieces too. Outside I run to escape the blackness.
Del Rizzo was inspired to write a book about refugee children as the mother of four children of her own. Her kids had seen many images of suffering refugees on television and asked her, "Will war come here? Where are they all fleeing to? Will someone help them? Are those children safe now?"
And it was really hard for me as a parent because, you know, you want to be truthful. Kids are so smart and they deserve honesty in your discussions of important issues like this, but you also want to make sure that they always feel safe and secure and that you tell them the facts, but in a way that's appropriate to their age level.
When Del Rizzo searched online for true life stories of child refugees, she learned about a boy who raised birds at home but was forced to abandon them when the family fled. But he later found wild birds to care for in a refugee camp.
And I thought it was so profound because it transcends language and it speaks to a child's universal love of animals and the comfort that they can bring during hard times, like especially during something as traumatic as displacement, in a way that would hopefully grab the reader and also help them like connect and empathize with the main character.
Canadian author Margaret Rohr's book, Stepping Stones, chronicles the journey of a Syrian refugee family on its way to safety in Europe. The illustrations are beautifully rendered entirely in pebbles and small stones by the Syrian artist Nisar Ali Badr. The story begins with the happy life of a little girl named Rama before calamity struck.
I thought it was a simple picture of a rooster, the breaking of dawn in a village in Syria where the child wakes up from the rooster crowing. So the book describes life before war and then what happens when war comes and when people have to start fleeing. And when her father, Rama's father, finally says it's time for us to join that river of people.
Roars opens to the page that shows the river of refugees, just like Rama and her family had become.
A river of strangers in search of a place to be free, to live and love, to laugh again, in search of a place where bombs did not fall, where people did not die on their way to market. A river of people in search of peace.
Roars ends the story on a hopeful note.
When Rama reaches the end of the land, there is the sea that they now have to try and cross. It was dangerous. And when they make it, there are people whose words she doesn't understand, but their outstretched arms and their smiles show her that they are welcome to stay. And they don't know if they'll stay forever or if they maybe be able to go back home one day.
Life does not always offer up happy endings. That's plain in Alan Gratz's book, Refugee. It's a book geared to kids between 9 and 13 years old. It features three parallel stories of child refugees. Joseph, a German Jewish boy escaping the Nazis in 1939, Isabel, a girl fleeing Castro's Cuba by raft in 1994, and Mahmoud, a Syrian boy, escaping his war-ravaged homeland in 2015. Each child suffers tragedy and triumph in their own way.
And so one of the things I wanted to do with this book was to show young readers that there is no one face for refugees. They can be different religions. They can be different races. They can be from different places. They can be from different economic levels.
Gratz notes that even the meaning of the word refugee has changed, at least in the U.S.
We used to hear the word refugee, and in our mind, we pictured somebody who needed help, people who were forced to flee their country. We met people who were called refugees with open arms and said, come to America, we have room for you, we care about you, we want to help you.
Gratz says that most refugees now living in America come from Africa, not the Middle East. Still, for many Americans, the word refugee equals Muslim.
And Muslims, for many people, equals terrorists. And that's incredibly unfortunate because these people did not want to leave their homes. They were forced out by violence, by persecution. Many of them had a life that they loved. And now they're just looking for a safe place where bombs aren't falling on their heads. So I do think that we need to teach empathy. And if we get them while they're kids, if we teach that empathy at a young age, I think it's something they will carry with them into adulthood. Part of my goal then is to show kids the things that are broken in the world with the sincere hope that they'll do something about it.
As this radio story is broadcast, untold numbers of children are frightened, uncertain where their new home will be, or whether they or their families will ever find peace and rest. The authors of these books share the wish that the hard luck stories of those real-life children will end with ease and happiness. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhibi in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Wagner Roberts, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
VOA. voaafrica.com.
On voaafrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
voaafrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.